Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Today on The Grave Talks, Danger at Your Door, Encounters with Black-Eyed Kids, a conversation with Gemma Jade. Black-Eyed Kids are an urban legend that has captured the imaginations and fears of many. These mysterious entities, often described as children with completely black eyes, are said to appear on doorsteps asking to be let in, or maybe wanting a ride home. Their presence is unsettling and their intentions are unknown. In her book, Gemma Jade compiled stories from those who claim to have faced these strange and frightening children firsthand. But the book doesn't stop at recounting tales. It also explores various theories about the nature of these beings. Are they ghosts, aliens, or something else entirely? After this conversation, you'll think twice about the next time you hear a knock after dark. Today on The Grave Talks, Danger at Your Door, Encounters with Black-Eyed Kids, a conversation with Gemma Jade. You know, before we really get started today, I want to talk about you and kind of your background and what you do in life and how did you end up writing a book about black-eyed kids? I'm very fascinated by all that.
So I have always been fascinated by the black-eyed kids as well. It was, I believe, around 2013, I was flicking through the channels and I saw a show, I think it was Monsters and Mysteries in America, and it just happened to be the BEK episode, and I became obsessed. I was researching everything I could possibly research, but back then I really wasn't out in the paranormal community. I definitely wasn't on YouTube, so I kind of just tucked it in the back of my head and prayed I never had an encounter, because my whole life I've encountered spirit, and I'm talking all different kinds, you know, fairies, ghosts, demons. I've accidentally channeled a Bigfoot one time. I'm a medium. So ever since I was little, I've been able to communicate with the other side. And I say the other side because that's interdimensionals as well, meaning extraterrestrials. I've had a very strange life. You know, I'm a very weird person because of those experiences. But I think when I came into YouTube 4.5 years ago, I felt so much better about everything. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of when my writing started. And all at once, about maybe 2 years ago, I was thinking to myself, why have I never covered the black-eyed kids? Like, I'm still so fascinated by them. And I just went to work at it. they're one of the very few entities that I know of that I've never had a personal encounter. I've never come across them. So that's another reason they fascinate me so much.
Which I'm just going to say, I think is a good thing.
Because, oh my gosh. Yes.
You know, seriously, this book, when I read it, there was one night I went to bed and I'm like, you know, I should really read a little on that book. And I started and I immediately had to quit reading. I'm like, what am I doing reading this before bed? They could come knocking on my door in the middle of the night. And I just got so freaked out that I could only read it during the daytime because I would think about them too much. And that doesn't seem like a good thing.
But no, you know, a lot of people think that the more you kind of think about them and research into them, that you'll bring them to you. And for me, that was a really hard thing. That's why it took me like a year and a half to 2 years to write that book, where normally it takes me maybe about a year with the deep research stuff and, you know, a few months for the campfire stories, encounters and all that. But I was afraid to delve too much into it because I was afraid that they were going to come knocking. And my husband, as a non-believer, would let them in. So I definitely did not want to draw them to me by doing too much research at once.
So black-eyed kids, is that kind of a more recent phenomena? Because, you know, it kind of starts with a story of a guy like in the 90s, and he wrote a story about an encounter. But you found some that go back farther than that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do believe it's a recent encounter because of Brian Bethel. He's a journalist from Abilene, Texas. He is the first one to get on the internet with his encounter. And from what I understand, he believed that he was the only one, you know, that had ever encountered these kids. He kind of thought he was going crazy. But in my research, I mean, I found, and I couldn't tell you the name of the tribes off the top of my head, but I found ancient tribes that built statues out of stone and of these kind of strange looking people. I saw the pictures of them in my research, but they took the time to go and either mine or find pure black obsidian for the eyes. Now, no human beings, I mean, there's very, very, very rare eye diseases where they might turn all black, but I was careful to look into that too. Like, could this just be some kind of genetic anomaly? 99.99%+ that is not the case because it is so extremely rare. It almost never happens. So people don't walk around with obsidian black eyes, and to go out of their way to find this, I guess what would be, I mean, I guess it depends on the area they were in, but like a hard to find kind of pricey crystal or gemstone to use for the eyes of these stone statues. Like, what was going on here? I believe they were a part of maybe an ancient race of gods, or they definitely have been here since the beginning of time, if not longer. And I'm 100% sure through my research that that's the case. And I found stories of people encountering them dating back to at least the 1940s.
Now, what would be some of the most common, if somebody listening right now goes, I have no idea what they're talking about, these black-eyed kids. And there does seem to be some very consistent reports that people who have encountered them kind of a lot of times say the same thing. So that would be like there's usually one older child, maybe one or two younger ones. They want to come in the house. And it seems like there's always, we need to come in and wait for our mom, or we need to come in and use your phone.
So yes, they want access to your personal space, and they do try to play on the human emotion. If saying, you know, our mom's going to be really worried about us doesn't work, the smaller one of the group or of the two will normally start crying, you know, really trying to play on your human emotion of, I can't leave these two kids abandoned, you know, in a snowstorm or in the middle of nowhere. Or they really do try to do that. And what I found in writing the book too, which shocked me and scared me, was that now what they're doing in more recent cases is, okay, so I have a six-year-old son and he has a favorite stuffed animal. So what they would do if they visited me was they'd be sure to have a boy that somewhat resembled my son in like blonde hair, obviously not the blue eyes,
right,
kind of in shape and figure, wearing basically an outfit that I would put on my son or the outfit my son wore to school that day. And the smaller child would be carrying the stuffed animal that is my son's favorite.
Which to me, if I looked out my peephole and I saw a kid that looked like my own kid, that would be such a huge red flag. I'd be like, I do not know what that is.
Right. But I think that's the thing. It's like it's like something in their training. I said this on a different interview one time. I'm like, it's like somebody taught them how to be human, but forgot a few things, right? So what you just said is absolutely the case. It's like, oh my gosh, this is so creepy. But I feel like what they're thinking is, I'm going to remind her of her own child. And she's going to think, I wouldn't want someone to leave my child out here. It's like they're really putting in-depth thought into approaching people. I don't know. I believe the black eyes is definitely something that they cannot change.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like they don't do that good a job of pretending to be human. But at a glance, you're kind of like, okay, these are just maybe like some creepy, weird kids. But the black eyes give it away and have been giving it away for centuries or possibly millennia. And they still have not changed that. And the only other entities that I've come across that have eyes like this are demons. And I do not think they're demonic. At all. I believe they could be demonic, but I don't think they're demons. Let me clarify that. Or extraterrestrials, you know, like the shiny black eyes of, say, the alien greys or the insectoids or, you know, from basically almost all of them that we're aware.
And I do want to get into the alien theory because I had never thought about that until I read your book. And then once I read your book, I'm like, aha, they're aliens. And so you definitely gave me something to think about. One thing I find really interesting, we have another podcast, Real Ghost Stories, and we've had several stories from people who have had encounters. And what I find interesting, and there was some very similar in your book where there's knock at the door in the middle of the night. Like one story we had was, she heard the knock and the dog got really freaked out and the dog ran to the door and the dog seems scared and nervous and like dogs get. And she got to the front door and looked out the peephole. She didn't say anything. She didn't turn on the porch light. She only looked out the peephole and the kid starts talking to her like, we know you're there behind the door.
Yeah, talking to her as though I believe what that was. Was she thought something and the kid responded to it. I may have covered that in my book too.
Yeah, it was a similar story.
There was one that was very similar where the woman had opened the door and she said, she thought to herself, Jesus Christ, what am I looking at?
Mm-hmm.
And the black-eyed kid looked up at her and smirked and said, you know, he's not real, right?
So when I read that,
she hadn't said anything else for that response to, you know, be applicable. It read her thought. I'm saying he is a person. It read her thought.
And what I found so creepy about this story we had was she didn't say anything. She didn't open the door. She only looked out the peephole. And then it was like, we need to call our mom. Please let us in. And she's like, how did they even know I had gotten up and gone to the door? I think they might have heard a dog barking. Doesn't mean a person's there. She felt like in the story, they knew she was right there.
They are relentless in their pursuit. And I believe that they are telepathic. And I do believe that they know. And I do. One of the reasons, and like you said, we can talk about the extraterrestrial or some other theories. One of the reasons I really believe that they're somehow connected to ETs or other interdimensionals is for that specific reason, right? So before these kids even come anywhere near the door, the victim, as I call the people that come across them, because they are victimized. Let's be very clear about that. it's all fun and games, but these people are traumatized for the rest of their lives.
Oh, it's like PTSD. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of them are never the same again. But they start feeling maybe nauseous, or all of a sudden there's like this anxiety, this feverish need to like check the locks on the door or not get off the couch. So energetically, we as human beings know that something is wrong. Something mm-hmm. is other, wrong, bad around us before the knock even comes. And I believe that's how the BEK, you know, so many times that I've seen from what you've just described, where they do know someone's there, even if the person has made no noise and given no signal that they're there. I just think it's an energetic thing. They're energetically connected to maybe our planet, or maybe to the area, or maybe just to humans in general. Because one of the things I was thinking is, are these hybrids gone wrong? And ETs just kind of dumped them in the woods of our planet, or dumped them on our planet, and were like, fend for yourself. So now, you know, are they visiting their other parent who has like no clue that they were even abducted? Like, I have these crazy theories, but they all lead back to they've got to be extraterrestrial or interdimensional in some way.
That, like I said, I had never thought of. But then once I was reading the book, I'm like, that makes some sense to me. And it kind of goes back to like when I was a kid and there was talk about alien abductions and all this. And I don't know where this came into my brain all the time, but there would be an anal probe. And I'm like, I do not want to get abducted by aliens, because why do you probe someone anally?
Oh my God.
There's a much more friendly approach to humans. That's not it. But when I read this, I'm like, it's almost like this energy suck thing. Like they're trying to get something out of you that they need. Like, because you call them in the book, did you call them energy vampires?
Vampires.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very vampiric.
And I'm like, that does make sense. Like they need that from you to keep going.
Right. I'm not even sure anymore that they need the permission to get in. I mean, they need permission to enter, but I really think that's just a ruse. Well, sometimes I think this because I go back and forth, but that's like a ruse just so that they can drain your energy, right? Because I talk about this I did another book, Shadow Entities, Sleep Paralysis and Beyond, where I talk about how our fear energy and our sexual energy are the like height of our energetic scale, right? It's the most energy you're putting out at any time. It's the most extreme when you're fearful or terrified or terrorized, and when you're in the middle of being in bed with your partner, I guess.
Right.
We'll say.
Those are the two
times where your energy is at its peak, one in one direction and one in the other. And actually terror is puts out more of an energetic footprint, I guess I would say, than the other. So that is the most energy we are ever giving out at one time. And I believe that's why they terrorize and terrify us, because they are feeding off of that energy. That's why people are always like, you know, and I'm sure you probably thought of asking this, like, do you think anyone ever actually got in the house? There are stories circulating the internet where, you know, people have claimed to, and there was one for me that was credible. There was another one where the BEK got into the truck, and that one I did actually speak to the person. So I know I believe that person, but I don't believe that they need to. I think the whole thing is getting in your personal space and terrorizing you so that they can drain you of your energy and leave.
Well, they did have, there was a story in the book. It's someone in Vermont who, I think if I remember right, it was a couple. She goes to the door and sees them, and they let them in because they're kids.
It's the middle of a snowstorm. I actually changed the location on that one.
Okay.
But yes, it was near Vermont. It was in that area, and there was a blizzard, just a really terrible blizzard. It was 2 a.m. and they're this older couple, and they're like, what in the world are these two kids doing out here? You know, come in before they even really had a chance to feel what they were feeling, right? So they got up, they looked out, they said, oh my gosh, kids, and took them in. And that's what I was saying earlier. I'd be afraid my husband would do, like, oh my gosh, get in here, you know, because
yeah, it's snowstorm. We need to help you get you home.
Yes, made them hot cocoa. And one of the things with that story, I'm not sure I believe it, not because I think the people who put it out are liars, but it's just because I don't think when they get in, people survive often, right? Because even in that story, depending on which version, and I could not find the first person to put that out, like the actual person who wrote that, because it was redone over the internet so many times. It was either the husband went through all of these illnesses and ended up dying of cancer, or, you know, he just got very, very sick for a long time. But then there was another one. I couldn't find the end result of that. I do believe they said there were like 5 cats in the house. The one cat that happened to come out and start hissing and growling at the BEK, that one was found bleeding from the inside out the very next day in the middle of the kitchen floor. Mm. And none of the other cats were ever seen again.
Thank God. That would be horrific.
Yeah. And that's kind of with the same thing with some races of extraterrestrials, where they will immediately go for the pets. It's like it's ingrained in them to go after the pets. The pets alert us to them.
Well, then there was the whole thing for years, another possible alien thing, the cattle mutilations that would happen. I don't know if those were ever real or if that was just some big urban legend, but I was always like,
I covered those on my channel. I did a video about them. They were absolutely real. And I've done some channeling since then where that was talked about. And a lot of it, and I just want to say, I usually say this in the beginning, everything that I say is something I've learned from either my guides or from my research or through my own experience. So anyone who disagrees with me or doesn't believe me, that's okay with me, because everyone has their own experiences. And we're all going to, because of those experiences, believe different things and come up with different things. But from what I understand about the cattle mutilations is that's practice. They can't always cut us open and mutilate us. So what I understood, and then there were times when it was done just as like a, you know, like in the Godfather movie, the horse's head left in the bed as like the, you know, don't mess with us type of message, I would say. That's what it's been. Like on Skinwalker Ranch, when they found the cattle that had been mutilated many times. That's a stop messing with things you're not supposed to be messing with, or this can be you type message. And then other times it's training. Because a lot of races of ETs don't want to harm or hurt or kill us. But they do need some things from us in order to be able to reproduce, or, you know, they don't have souls like we do. So, but the cattle mutilation is definitely true.
Because I like to think it's not. But I've read so many stories. You know what I mean? It's like,
yes.
Over the years, I've read so much about that. I'm like, there's got to be something there. Now with the
surgical lacerations for sure. Yeah.
Now with the black-eyed kids, it seems like there is a pattern with them, you know, with one that kind of appears to be the spokesperson. And yes. Also one other thing that you said in the book, that oftentimes they're not communicating in a human way. It's more of a robotic way.
Yes, they're very robotic, where, you know, sometimes they'll sound normal, but from what I understand, for the most part, across, I'd say like 98% of witnesses, they say there is something off. Either it's a 10-year-old boy who is speaking with the authority of like a 50-year-old CEO who's been around the block a few times, or, and this is usually, I find, more with the quote unquote females of them, where they're very robotic. Well, where they'll say like, you need to let us in, our mom, just like that. Like they're reading off of a script and can't read well.
And there was one story too in there where the spokesperson said, you know, something like that, like, you need to let us in, our mom, we need to call our mom. And then immediately or shortly after that said, exactly the same thing within that exact inflection.
Very repetitive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same inflection, same tone. It, like everything is the same, as if someone pressed a button and they're on repeat now. And when that doesn't work, it's inevitable that the smaller one will start to cry. But the crying is more like on cue and very fake. So it's like as they rub their eye, and then they'll stop crying, peek up at you to see if it's working, and then look back down and start rubbing their eyes and crying again. It's obviously like they're not crying, right? But for some reason, they still think that this is going to work. Because I don't actually think they need entry. I think they just need that fear, terror buildup. They get what they need and they leave.
Because if you were to let them in, and there was a few encounters in the book where it does seem like they granted them some sort of access. But you don't think they really need that. That it's more the fear that they're feeding off of.
Right. I don't think they need entry. I don't know if it's like, you know, the old vampire lore where you have to invite them in. And in some cases, you can rescind the invitation. I do think they're vampiric. Like I said, you know, energetically, psychically, I believe they feed off of our psychic senses. But do they actually need the access? I don't think so. The one story that was very, very credible, I was able to confirm it with the people who experienced it. And I mean, when people tell these stories, it's like they've been through a war. You know, they're very traumatized. Their eyes kind of go dim. You know, they tear up, they shake. I could tell that, you know, they weren't lying. And this was a mom who pulled over to the side of the road like she always did to run into a little, you know, a little corner grocery store where I'm from. They call them bodegas, but they're just a little store where you can get a bunch of different things. And she left her, I think, 10 or 12 year old son in the car. As she did, ran in, you know, she might have been in there 3 minutes. When she came out, she was kind of on autopilot, and she kind of got back in the car and talking to her son, and he wasn't saying anything back to her. And she went to adjust her mirror, and she saw a very pale, black-eyed boy. This was in broad daylight, by the way. They don't only come at night. With its or his arm around her son. Her son was just sitting there staring dazed and numbly at her through the mirror. She jumps out, rips her son out of the car, goes back into the little store. And the cashier, who knows her, is like, I'm going to call the cops. He couldn't understand. She was so panicked. He thought that someone had tried to rob her, or tried to break into her car, or kidnap the child. She's like, look, don't call the cops. Just go check and see if there's anyone near my car. He goes out. There's no one at all in the parking lot. There's no other customers. And, you know, that's another thing where it's always like there's never any other people around. They like make sure. I don't know if they keep people away or if there just happened to be no witnesses ever. So she's like, I'm going to call my husband, though, because I am not getting back in that car. She calls her husband. She's like, I know this is going to sound really weird. She was still panicked, crying, you know, terrified. And she's like, I'll explain when we get home, but you need to come to, you know, so-and-so grocery store, and you drive my car home, and I will drive home with our son in your car. He's like, okay, this is really weird, but I'll do it. Because he could tell something was wrong. So he gets there. She drives home with the son, and she makes it fine. The husband got into a car accident. Luckily, he only sustained minor injuries. The car, I think, was totaled. He said the last thing he remembered was feeling really dizzy and this like really horrible stench filling the car. And then he blacked out and woke up in the hospital.
Oh my God.
However, the son, for 18 months, I think it was 18 months, could have been 2 years, but I think 18 months, he just got sick and sick and sick. And he was coming down with all of these crazy things. So the doctors couldn't figure it out for a few months. Then they're like, oh my gosh, you know, he has scarlet fever. And they're like, okay, how does he get scarlet fever? Once they start finding a cure or a treatment for that and giving it to him, then suddenly he has the measles. So they're like, okay, it wasn't scarlet fever, it was the measles. And they start treating him for the measles. Then they're like, oh, it wasn't the measles, his appendix is about to burst. It must have changed 15 times in 18 months, this kid's symptoms, until finally the parents took him to their church and they had, you know, the whole congregation praying over him, or at the very least praying for him for a full 24 hours. And once that 24 hour mark was up, the boy was 100% better and never got sick like that again.
What is it about the encounter that could physically affect you like that? You know what? It's almost like they're infecting you with something.
yeah, they're taking your mm-hmm. energy and they're infecting you. That's exactly it. And for me, that was strange because, like I said, while I think they're demonic, I don't believe they're demons, because demons have found a way to perfect coming to you as in the image of a child with regular eyes, right? So yes, demons have black eyes. Yes, when you watch the movies and you see demons possessing people, the eyes turn all black. And that is true. That does happen. I've seen it happen. I've encountered demons. I've encountered possessed people. I've helped them. But they don't need to have the black eyes from the door. They could have blue eyes, green eyes. They look like very normal human kids or human spirit kids, right? So they don't need to do that. So in my estimation, they are not demonic, because demons actually do a better job at presenting themselves as children. I don't know. I just don't know. It's like, I know that they're energetically taking, but how does it have this type of effect? And it has this type of effect every time someone's come into that close proximity. Mm-hmm. The couple that let them in the snowstorm in Vermont, or wherever that was, I couldn't even pin that down. That's why I just said, you know, Vermont, was same thing. They said the husband got sick with like 15 or 16 different things before he finally died of cancer. Now, this comes from skin to skin contact, right? They need to actually touch you for this. This isn't just being in their vicinity. So the BEK had its arm around the boy. This isn't like they come to your door and you talk to them and tell them to kick rocks through the door. This is like they have now physically interacted with you, with your body. And that's when you end up sick. I just don't know the connection. I really, really don't. Because I know there are so many, probably every race of ET or interdimensional I've ever encountered knows how to, you know, they don't come down with sicknesses like we do. And a lot of them, when they come to Earth, have to stay in the, for lack of a better word, spaceships, because they, our air is so toxic for them. They can't breathe in our air. And people like me and other people who astrally travel and say go to like the Galactic Federation or go on these ships need to be like, you know how like back in the day they would spray you with a hose and throw that powder stuff on you before you went to jail to like clean you? They have to go through a process, something similar to that, to even get onto the ship if they're not on there astrally, because we are so toxic for so many races of ET, but I've never seen it where they're that toxic for us. So that's another reason it's so fascinating for me. I don't have the answers.
And in the case of the little boy, the dad hadn't even been there. He got in the car and there was almost some after effect, you know,
like an energetic dizziness. After effect.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that, but it's like, what do they leave behind? Mm-hmm. What did it leave, something on the skin? Did it do it on purpose? Right. And this foul stench isn't always associated with them, but every once in a while I will come across somebody who said, you know, I kind of smelled them before I saw them. And that's another reason a lot of people mistakenly believe that they are demonic, because the smell of rotten eggs and sulfur does accompany some of them.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Gemma Jade about her book, Danger at Your Door, Encounters with Black-Eyed Kids, available on Amazon or wherever books are sold. You can follow her YouTube page, just search Gemma Jade. And if you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free, or you can go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.